You know, it occurred to me, reading over all your work, that you shared a lot with cartoonist Robert Crumb, which is kind of an odd pairing,
really?
I admit. But yeah, you're both wrestling with similar demons, resentment from your youth, insecurity, injustices, rejection by the opposite sex, and you're doing it in very, very different ways. I mean, you almost went in completely diametrically opposite ways in how you deal with these issues and how you deal with, you know, your personal feelings about them.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you ever, if you saw that connection or how you feel about Crumb's work, because I mean, in some ways you're so similar and in other ways you're so radically different.
I think he's great. I am appalled at the vulgarity of the so-called underground cartoonist. I only met Robert once. It was at a big, some kind of a convention downtown. He was just coming out of the building, and we were going in, and somebody said, "Oh, there's Robert Crumb." And I said, "Hi, Robert. I'm Charles Schulz. Glad to meet you." And he was just stunned, as if, he said, "Oh, really?" You know, just as if I would hate him or something. And I really thought it was laughable.
Well, where is that?
That he would think that I would hate him, that I must be some kind of a wishy-washy, goody-goody, two-shoes person or something.
Uh-huh.
I think his drawing is great. He does funny things. But
he also deals with sex very,
oh, well,
you know, openly.
Which is all right if it weren't so terribly vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
There was a young underground cartoonist came up to see me once here several years ago, and we sat and talked. And I said, "You know, the trouble with you guys is that you think you are so free in what you do, and that we are inhibited." I said, "You couldn't do what I do." I said, you guys, you all do the same thing. You all think you're free, but you all do the same jokes, the same vulgarities." And I said, "I defy you just to do what I do." I said, you'd never be able to do it.
Right.
Because I'm not in the business to offend people or to be whatever that, you know.
Right. But, you know, I mean, someone like Crumb doesn't do it to offend people, but, I mean, it can offend people. I'm sure it does offend people.
Yeah.
But, you know, in an odd way, I mean, another parallel is that, I mean, you don't care if you offend people with, you know, with scripture.
No, I know.
And Crumb doesn't care if he offends people by dealing with sex or politics or whatever. So, in a way, you both have, you know, you're both compelled to do what you have to do, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah, I always wonder what made me like that. I think there's some kind of a weird connection there. I've never been able to figure it out. I think back upon it, you know, that I have never sworn in my life, and I never used vulgar phrases, and I don't know why. Now, as I get older, I find that I don't use vulgar phrases just because I'm trying to be more cultured or something, and I like the niceties of language, and I think just the way some of the, you know, the stand-up comedians and all of their language. My mother and dad were never crude, but my dad would say damn or hell or something now and then, but I never heard them tell dirty stories that way. I don't know. And I went through the army, you know, 3 years of the worst vulgarities you can imagine, although I think it's worse now. But I don't know what ever made me that way. Maybe there's some kind of a fatal flaw or something. I don't know what it is, but that's just the way I am. And
well, did it have to do with your upbringing in the Midwest?
I didn't have any upbringing, really. I mean, it wasn't anything with upbringing. That's just the way we live.
Well, one way or the other, though, you do, whether it's, you know, imposed or if it's simply part of your environment, you know?
Yeah, but I was surrounded by it all the time.
Yeah, but you never...
Huh. Never.
Because I was fascinated going through your...
Maybe I'm competitive, that's all. I wasn't going to be dragged down.
Right. Well, apparently you're very competitive.
Yeah. You have to be. That's why I'm competitive in drawing the comic strip.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, now
I want to make the playoffs.
Right. One thing I wanted to ask you before you get away from it is that the parallel I was drawing between you and Robert Crumb, he deals very directly with sexual impulse and his sexual impulses and his contradictions.
Yeah.
Whereas you deal... you're dealing with sexuality is much more genteel. You deal with a much more romanticized or idealized version of love. I mean, Charlie Brown and the red-haired girl and his an unrequited love, and Peppermint Patty's, you know, interest in Charlie Brown. It's oblique and it's touching, but you don't deal with sexuality per se. And I was wondering if you ever felt like you wanted to do that, or if that was an area that you felt like you like to explore but couldn't because of the newspaper strip format.
Well, in the first place, these are just little kids.
Yeah. Right.
That really puts a lid on it.
Which
right
limits your
start.
Ability
yeah.
to do that. Did you ever feel
also,
constricted?
Oh, no. No, I don't feel restricted at all. Not in the least. I can do anything that I think of. And I don't know anything.
Did you ever see the movie?
I saw the movie. That's all I know about Robert. You know, I admire his drawing. I think he draws beautifully and very creative and all that. But also don't forget that I raised 5 children. Mm-hmm. I also have 16 grandchildren, which separates us a little, really, doesn't it?
Well, he has 2 children.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about a dog?
Right. I don't think he has a dog.
So, you know, it's a difficult comparison. One that's valid, I suppose, from a journalistic state. I don't know. I'm getting too old to worry about those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you know the writings of... what's his name? Annie Lamott? About a girl that she's playing tennis. Anyway, she and I shared the podium down in San Francisco, and I shared it.
Uh-huh.
I would be at a terrible disadvantage, depending on what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of overwhelming for me, because she's going and just talks about all of her problems.
Right.
So that's too much for me. I don't belong in that kind of company.
Right. You definitely don't feel comfortable discussing things like that.
I just wonder.
I wonder if that's generational or if it's more simply, you know, the very, you know, different moral perspective. Is that right?
Yeah.
Have you grown older gracefully or have you fought it?
No, I'm fighting it.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you is that I know that your handshakes.
Oh, it's been shaking for a long time.
Right. Is that getting worse? Is it getting more difficult to draw the strip?
The same as always. It's leveled off now, so.
Right.
I don't even think about it. But it bothers me if sometimes, like, going back over the top of Peppermint Patty's hair or something like that.
Bill Malden, actually, this sort of ties in with what we were just talking about. Bill Malden said about you that he's a preacher at heart. He said, all good cartoonists are jack-leg preachers. There's a very strong moral tone there.
Alden's quite a guy.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I used to do a lot of preaching.
That's right.
But I'm no good at it. And I never was any good at it. But I would never do it again. I don't mind giving talks. I give talks, and I may not do it again, down at Barnaby Conrad's Writers Conference in Santa Barbara every year. And it's kind of fun, and I like talking about cartooning, and I love questions and answers, and just talking to people about writing and all of that. But I would never want to be a preacher, because I don't have any axes to grind or beliefs that I want to convince people of. But Mullen's right there, you know. Cartooning is preaching, and I think we have the right to do some preaching. I think I mentioned that someplace. Something wrong with your approach if you're not preaching, if you're not taking things to a certain depth. That's one of the things that I think I've done all of these subjects, and have taken them to a deeper depth than most people. Definitely the theological thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done things that none of the others, simply because I don't think they know anything about it. And I hate shallow humor. I hate shallow religious humor. I hate shallow sports humor. And I hate shallowness of any kind.
You know, it's funny because I know what Malden is talking about, but in another way, you're doing the exact opposite of preaching. You're raising questions that are unanswerable.
Yeah, I suppose that's good.
And I think that's the heart of your strip.
Did you ever read the Gospel According to Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd like him, Robert Short.
Robert Short, right.
Yeah, you know, wonderful guy. We didn't even know each other when he wrote the book. We didn't meet for about a year after it came out, but not since. Of course, I haven't seen him now for a long time because I think he's in Arkansas now as a Presbyterian ministry. He finally joined the ministry after all those years. So he writes to me now and then and sends me copies of his sermons. He loves preaching.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd like him. He's a very nice man.
Mm. You know, it's funny. He said, I mean, to get back to religion, he said, he's a Tolstoy believer. Love is what it was all about. That people were capable of this, that the spirit of love was inherent in people. Culture causes people to be mean and short-sighted. So Tolstoy wanted to withdraw from culture, but very simply working with his own hands. And he said, I think Sparky's religious orientation is typified by Tolstoy. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. It's beyond me. That's too deep for me.
No, I don't believe that.
I think War and Peace is the greatest novel ever written. Tolstoy is a remarkable man, but he sure went through a lot of turmoil, and at one point I think he felt that he had to give everything away, didn't he?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he also had that, what Scott Fitzgerald talked about once, as the dark night of the soul, didn't he? He had a terrible experience once on a trip where he felt a darkness kind of overwhelming him.
Yes.
And I think perhaps a lot of us have gone through that in different ways, and I don't even know if it can be explained, but I'm just astounded that he was able to write the way he did. Of course, it's a society that I don't understand at all. You know, I can't comprehend the whole Russian way of living and the way he lived and all that, and did with everything that he did and was still able to write this monumental. But, dinner recently with my heart surgeon. We had played in a golf tournament, and afterwards we were talking. We only see each other about once a year, but I had bypass surgery. Gosh, I guess it's been back around 1980 or so. He was the one that did it. And here is the man, heart surgeon. And I said, what do you think really is the important things in the world? He loves music, and I said, do you think what you do really the greatest thing in the world to be able to do it, writing a great symphony or a piano concerto? So that's the great thing, to be able to write something that's so great that thousands and millions of people enjoy it year after year after year. I mean, that's the real accomplishment. And I did a strip about that once where Charlie Brown was wondering, or I think he was sitting on the bench with Linus, War and Peace or Beethoven's Ninth or something like that. And then he gets up and strikes out. And I think he sits down and says something about, and I'll probably never write War and Peace either, something like that. I forgot. But I always think about things like that. What is of importance? I suppose the most important thing is just to do what you can do best. I mean, you have no other choice, do you? You have a certain
right.
amount of abilities, and do them to the best your
right.
ability, yeah.
Right. You know, you said, you made reference to something you quoted once before that is either by Tolstoy or Fitzgerald, which was, I guess it's a favorite quote of yours. It's in the real dark night of the soul, it is always 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And that's just an incredibly harsh quotation that, in a way, fuels your strip. Because in a way, it's always 3 o'clock in the morning in your strip.
Well, and Napoleon said, I don't know if he said he didn't have, but a military man has to have that. The attack is planned all night long, and all of a sudden it's dawn, and you think, what have I done? I'm not going to do that. I can't do this, you know.
Right.
But the brave man has the courage of the early morning, and he does it anyway.
Right.
And I think we all have that courage to go off and make the trip that we don't want to make, or to see somebody we don't want to see, or all of that. That takes the courage of the early morning.
Do you have that courage because you delve into this subject matter every day?
Oh, I don't think about it. I just do it because I got nothing else to do.